Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Fritz Onion. Thank you.
Right, well, thank you all for coming, staying to the bitter end of this conference, late session. Before I start, I want to provide you with a link to the demos that I will have uploaded later this evening, so you can get immediate access to all of the content that I'm about to present. And this will just be at the URL that you see on the screen right here, link.pluralsight.com/techdays10ajax. I will make sure that's available later tonight. The topic we're going to be covering in this last session here is ASP.NET Ajax version 4. And my name is Fritz Onion, and I work for Pluralsight. I'm one of the co-founders. And Pluralsight does .NET developer training. We do classroom courses. We have online courses. And that's available for a subscription model. I do have a bunch of free one-week trials to our online courses. If anyone is interested, please just see me right after the talk, and I'll have a card for you, which will give you an activation code to access the content. I'm the author of a few books on ASP.NET, MSDN articles, speak at conferences pretty frequently, and I'm an MVP. Here's my contact information, email, blog, and Twitter feed. If you want to watch me on my trip home tomorrow, that would be on Twitter. So let's jump right in. So the Ajax library, it was officially renamed the ASP.NET Ajax library, and the focus of this library was primarily on the client-side set of features. So if you're familiar with doing ASP.NET Ajax development, you'll know that the initial releases of ASP.NET Ajax have been very server-oriented in their implementation. They gave us the update panel, they gave us the timer, various other controls that rendered a bunch of client-side JavaScript and the toolkit controls, but all these controls were accessible on server-side pieces. And one part specifically that was notably missing from a client development perspective was when you pulled data across using JSON formats from your server-side web services, you were left with a bunch of data in memory in the client browser and no support really for turning that into some user interface, for presenting it to the user as a list, besides just coding directly against the DOM or using jQuery or some other framework. So the original intent of this library was to provide us with a client-side framework for doing exactly that. In fact, one of the biggest features of the ASP.NET Ajax library is the client template rendering that I'll spend some time going over here. Before I jump into some of this stuff, let me just get a quick show of hands. How many of you are actively using ASP.NET Ajax? So you're using update panels? Yeah, quite a few of you. Great. So it's actually been really interesting, to say the least, over the last few weeks to see the unveiling of information about the ASP.NET Ajax framework, because there's been some confusion about how it's going to fit into the next release and how the toolkit fits in and all of this. And I just need to give you the latest status on what's going on here. And the latest status turns out to be this. Well, here's the updates as we saw them from outside of Microsoft. On March 3rd, they released beta preview 6 of the ASP.NET Ajax library. And this was supposed to be a precursor to the release. And those are the bits that I'm using today, by the way, for the demos that I'll go through. And they talked about some of the features they're working on. They're contributing this to the CodePlex Foundation, the codeplex.org. They're merging the control toolkit with the core library, so you no longer have to install those separately. And then literally 2 weeks later, at Mix, they announced that they were, and I put all the text up here so you can read it, throwing their weight behind jQuery and making it the primary way to develop client-side Ajax applications using Microsoft technologies. And so what does this mean? Well, it's still a bit in flux, to be honest with you, because this literally happened like 2 weeks ago. So how this is all going to shake out in the end is not exactly clear, but from everything they've said so far, it sounds like they're going to not put any additional effort into the Ajax library, which made my perspective of giving a talk on this library a bit dubious. So, but here's why I'm still here and why we're giving the talk. First of all, I'm going to do a brief description of some of the server-side changes that are coming. And those are absolutely there. Everything's exactly as it's going to be. And I can show you some things they've enhanced in the server-side model in ASP.NET Ajax. And secondly, I am going to spend some time in the talk today going over the client-side library as it stands in Preview 6. It's a very usable implementation, and I think you'll see some of the features are quite compelling. And I want to do this for two reasons. One is the library is usable. So if you find the functionality that you see today useful and want to incorporate it, you can absolutely grab those script files and use them in your projects, right? There's a Go Live license for it. having said that, they are putting their efforts into jQuery. And the second reason I wanted to continue with this talk today is a lot of the features that I will walk through today in the client-side script library, they are going to work on jQuery plugins that accomplish something similar in a similar fashion. So things like the client script loader and the client templating model and the data view and the data access model, all these things are things they are putting into jQuery extensions now, or the Microsoft devs are, and they're going to lobby the jQuery team to you know, put these into jQuery. And they're going to be as, I mean, there's no special relationship there necessarily. They're just going to create what everyone hopes will be great plugins and that the jQuery community will adopt them. So that's their goal going forward. And it's a, I have to say, I think it's the right decision. So after all of this work in the client-side libraries, hopefully they're going to take that hard-won experience and put it towards jQuery. And let me just get a show of hands. How many of you are actively using jQuery in your sites today? Yeah, almost as many as was using ASP.NET Ajax. If you do a survey of sites on the web today, I think it's upwards of 30 to 35% of all sites on the web are using jQuery as their client-side library. So one of the implications of this is moving forward, all of the work that Microsoft puts into the jQuery library, hopefully, you know, building these same types of features, will be usable by a much wider community. So there are a lot of people out there that exclusively use jQuery and you know, would not consider bringing in the Ajax library. So it'll be a much wider potential set of clients. And I think it's good for us as Microsoft developers as well, because it gives us just one client-side stack, if you will, to work in, right? So if you haven't started using jQuery yet and you're considering doing some client-side work beyond what you see in the update panel type of thing, I would definitely recommend that you start getting acquainted with jQuery. It's because that's where pretty much everyone is heading for client-side work in the future. Okay, so with that out of the way, I'll give you a moment to scatter if this doesn't sound interesting to you anymore. Like I said, I did want to start with a brief description of some of the things that have some of the server-side features that are coming forward. In fact, I have a slide on this. Hold on. I'm sorry. Let me do this first. So everything on the slide is true as of today. So I don't make any guarantees going forward what's going to change or what's not going to change. But my understanding is the implementation as it stands today will be made available and will continue to be available for people that want to use this client-side library. It's available today on ajax.codeplex.com, so that's where you can go to download it. There's a nice set of documentation and samples and tutorials up on asp.net/ajax-library. That's the one place you want to go to reference to get the references for the client-side toolkit controls. All the scripts are now loadable through the Microsoft Ajax Content Delivery Network, or CDN, and we'll talk more about that in just a minute. And then perhaps one of the most significant changes for ASP.NET developers, server-oriented developers, is the toolkit. And again, a quick show of hands, how many of you are actively using the ASP.NET Ajax toolkit? Yeah, quite a few. Yeah, they get something on the order of 100,000 downloads a month or even more. So it's a widely used toolkit. And the way you have to use it today, as those of you that are using it know, is you have to deploy the drop of the toolkit you want to use in the bin directory of your deployed site. And it's not installed as part of ASP.NET core. So it's always a separate installation, which is always an extra step and sometimes a bit of a nuisance in a newly deployed site. So one thing they are doing is migrating the server-side control toolkit controls into the core release of ASP.NET for version 4. So you will no longer have to download those separately. The extender model still works like it always has, where you can take a text box and adorn it with a calendar extender or what have you. And that will all work like it has been working, but now it's going to be integrated into the core release, and you don't need to do a separate installation. I did mention also they've placed the AJAX library, the one we're talking about today, up on codeplex.org, which is different from codeplex.com. This is actually a true open source implementation. There's some legal difference between the two, which I'm not a lawyer, so I will not attempt to describe, but it's apparently even more open source. And then the support for these things is targeted for after RTM as well. Although that one I'm not quite as clear on now that they're not officially doing more development for it. Okay, so let's start with the server-side stuff. One thing you'll notice is there are a couple new attributes on the script manager, one of which is AJAX framework mode. So one thing that a lot of people have asked for on the script manager control is the ability to use the script manager to load your scripts, but not load the ASP.NET AJAX scripts. So you probably have gotten into this habit of using the script manager's script element to include JavaScript files in your pages. And it's a good way to do it because you know it's all loaded before you get to the page load event in the client. But every time you use the script manager, you're pulling in the core ASP.NET AJAX scripts as well. And if you're not using the AJAX functionality, then it's kind of a waste. So they've given us the ability to do that, to control that here by setting the AJAX framework mode. And the options are disabled, enabled, and explicit. Enabled is the historic, the legacy value that's the default. And disabled says don't bring any scripts except the ones that I tell you to. And explicit says bring in my scripts, and then here's the exact set of scripts I want you to bring in from ASP.NET AJAX. So it gives you a lot of flexibility in how you load things. And then the other new attribute on the script manager is enable CDN. So there's an enable CDN property on the script manager. And this just says instead of loading the scripts out of the local resources from the assemblies, which is where the script manager traditionally loads the scripts from, it will go to the Microsoft Content Delivery Network at Microsoft's URL and load the scripts from there. And we'll talk more about some advantages or why you might consider doing that in a little bit. Okay, but like I said, the other controls are pretty much the same as you're probably used to. The update panel control, still gives you that postback hijacking and turning it into an asynchronous callback. The update progress control gives you the nice show the user something's happening when you're doing one of these asynchronous postbacks or callbacks, rather. So let me just run this one here and talk about a little bit of behavior with the server-side update panel that a lot of people don't seem to have run across before. So there's some interesting behavior you get with the update panel. What I've done in this example here is I've added a delay in the SQL query. So it takes 3 seconds to actually perform the retrieval on my data source. So every time I do pagination, it's going to take 3 seconds delay. And that will give the update progress control a moment to kick in and display. Right? If we go down here and click on a page, I get my contact server GIF animation going on down there. And that happens every time I click on one of these. But here's a question for those of you doing update panels. What happens if, while I'm waiting for that to come back and the update progress is in place, what if I click on it again? What is the behavior if you have an update panel and the user hits something that generates the asynchronous callback, and then the user hits it again before the first one completes? Anyone happen to know? Yeah. Essentially, the first one gets canceled, and the second one gets executed. Yeah, it's kind of last one wins. And this makes sense for the most part, but the problem is, if you get a user behavior like this, which is not too uncommon, click, 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 right? You can sort of get the user into an infinite loop, and those are much harder to break than code infinite loops. So the user sits there clicking, and he probably just ends up quitting the page. So one really easy fix you can do to this, or you can work with in the update progress control and the update panel control, is you can write a little bit of a client-side script to interact with the asynchronous callback mechanism and actually have the user cancel the first one, or I'm sorry, cancel the second one and just leave the first one alone if you want to do that. So you actually have control over these things. Let me show you the example that I have, just to give you an idea. This is the same kind of thing, so it's the same scenario. But this time I've added a little bit of client script so that as the user clicks on something twice, I notice it and I give him a little message just to gently remind him that he already asked me to do something else that I'm still working on, right? So, and you can craft that message however you'd like. This is what I happen to do. Anyway, so that's kind of nice because no matter how many times he clicks, it still goes and finishes that first one that he did. And the way I did that, if you see the example here, is I just added a little bit of script down at the bottom. I could have added this in a separate file and brought it in as well. And in this case, I used the client-side object, which you get anytime you use an update panel. It's part of the AJAX library, called the Page Request Manager. And I got the global instance of it, and I asked to add a handler for the initialized request event. And that's the event that's triggered every time an asynchronous postback is initiated to the server. And then inside of that handler implementation, I just checked the Page Request Manager, and I asked him, are you already in an asynchronous postback? And if he was, then I just want to cancel the one that was currently made, right? That's the decision that I made. So I set the cancel attribute or property to true on the incoming arguments. I triggered my little indicator to the user that he should stop clicking so much and went on, and that preempted the second call from actually executing. So if you haven't dug into the client-side model at all when you're working with update panels, it's worth sort of poking around and seeing what you can do, because with relatively little effort, you can add functionality that's often quite useful to work with the clients. Okay, so let's get into the AJAX library here. Again, this is preview 6 is the release that I'm talking about. And it's available from CodePlex. You can download it today and try it out. So the one thing they added here was a client script manager. Let me describe the motivation for this thing. So I'm sure all of you have used the server-side script manager that gives you the ability to reference scripts and bring in the AJAX libraries. The problem with the server-side script manager is specifically with ASP.NET MVC applications. So how many of you are building MVC applications today? Any? Oh, fair number. Okay, good. So as you're probably aware, in MVC, there's no such thing as a server-side script manager. That's not something you can put into your views, and it doesn't make sense there. So the question is, how do we bring in the libraries the right way, and how do I use some of the features of ASP.NET AJAX inside of an MVC application? And what they did was they added this client-side component called the client script loader that is capable of loading scripts on demand, and it even supports script combining and dependencies as well. And it's very simple to use. One of the things they did in this release was they refactored all of their JavaScript files, so they're much smaller, more granular, and more hierarchically related than they were in the past releases. So you can actually choose like a tree of script files to bring into your system, as opposed to just bringing the whole thing in based on what you're trying to do. And the client script manager, client script loader, is the object that's capable of loading those branches within a tree for you, essentially. And the way it works is there are two things you can specify for the script loader. Well, first of all, you do this. You say you bring in this one JavaScript file into your page. And this could be in an MVC app. It could be an HTML page, whatever. And that will create the script loader for you and make it available. And then you interact with the script loader by using sys.require, which I see right here. And sys.require takes an array of objects in JavaScript, and these can be components that you want to use, or they could be actual script files you want to bring in. So if I'm using the data view, which is a component we'll talk about in a minute here that helps us with templating and binding, I would say require sys.components.dataView, and it would bring in all the script files necessary to use that thing. And then you know everything is loaded by the time you get to the onReady event. So there's an event that is also initialized when the scripts are loaded called onReady, and that will trigger once everything is in place and ready to go. So that's one thing. And then the other option, so that was using a component name. The other option is to use these script values. And this slide is an intentionally dense slide because I'm just providing it for a reference. But you can see what some of the options are here. You can specify I'm using ADO.NET, I'm using application services, I'm using history, I'm using jQuery. All of those are things you can specify into the script loader, and it will load the right subset of scripts necessary to perform, to use those applications. You can see the list over here. And the other nice thing about this script loader is it's pluggable. You can add your own scripts in there. You can set up dependencies. You can create your own aliases for different sets of scripts. So it's a really nice model for loading scripts into an application from the client side, right? This is without doing it on the server. You just add that one start function and let the script loader take care of loading all the files necessary to do what you want to do. So this is available today in this Ajax script. It's something they are proposing to put into a jQuery plugin to make it easier to load scripts as well. And hopefully something like that will come to be. We already talked about this, the script manager. So let's talk about the content delivery network a little bit. The CDN is something Microsoft set up a few months ago. And they host all of the ASP.NET Ajax scripts, as well as the jQuery scripts that you can use up there. And there are two advantages to hosting or to using scripts that are loaded on the CDN. One is they're caching these things on edge servers around the world. So there's a good chance that when you load a script from the CDN, you're going to load it from a server that is closer to the client than your server is. So it will hopefully load faster. And then the other advantage is that if a lot of people start using this, and a user is using multiple applications in his browser, then those script files will be cached in the browser from the previous application. And your application might never even have to go, or the browser might never have to go out to the CDN to actually download those scripts for your application. So those are the two potential advantages to working with the CDN. And it works much the same way that other CDNs out on the web work. There's one, Google has a CDN, as well as Amazon and some others. And you can see the full list of files if you go to this URL right here, which is www.asp.net/ajax/CDN. And that's sort of the top-level documentation page for this thing. And it shows you all of the scripts that you can reference with a full URL. So this is a reference to the preview 6 start script that I was just referring to. Down here you can see references to using jQuery from the CDN and loading specific versions of jQuery off of their host. So, useful tidbit. Okay, and toolkit controls. So as I mentioned, the server-side toolkit controls are going to be included with ASP.NET 4 as part of the core release. So they're still there. They still work like they have. They still have the extenders built into them. And you can attribute text boxes and such with those controls. The one thing they did want to do, however, with these controls is give you a client-side option, too. So right now, to use the toolkit controls, you pretty much have to use them in their server-side incarnation. So you need to have an instance of a text box, and you need to have an instance of like the calendar extender control. And you point them to each other, and they add the additional client-side functionality. So what they wanted to do was give like MVC applications or straight HTML pages the ability to use these toolkit controls as well, things like the calendar or the color picker or some of those nice rich tools that you can get. And so to do this, they've created client-side only versions of the classes, which you can associate with a DOM element in JavaScript. So instead of making that association on the server, you can actually make the association inside of your client-side code. So here's an example of what that looks like. And this example also uses the client script loader. So I can show you how that's going to work. So this one's... So I'm bringing in the start.debug.js file. There are two versions of that start file, which will trigger the loading of all the other script files appropriately, so they all load debug or not. And then I'm also bringing in the toolkit JavaScript file, which is called extended controls. That's one thing they hadn't actually hooked into the loader yet with this drop. And down here, I tell the loader that I need to use sys.components.calendar, sys.components.watermark, and sys.components.colorpicker for the three things I want to work with. And then what I'm able to do is I just have plain HTML elements down here, a couple of input elements, and I'm using sys.create, and then I'm using the toolkit client-side object, watermark, and calendar, and color picker, to associate a new instance of that toolkit object with the DOM object. And notice we're using a jQuery-like selector syntax, or CSS-like selector syntax, So I'm using the identifier of the client-side element I want to associate with it. So again, you're just doing full client-side toolkit association without having to set anything up on the server, right? We're loading the scripts in the client, we're consuming them in the client, and we're making the associations with the controls on the client. So you can see my watermark up here is showing in the text box. If I click on that one, it gives me the date interface. And down here, I have it associated with the color picker that gives us the nice client-side color picker interface that you've probably seen before. So most of those controls are now, most of the toolkit controls are now available as client-side only elements if you want to just bring them in and start using them. And again, that's something that's there right now, right? You can go grab these controls and use them. The one thing you do need to be careful of if you're going to do this is on the server, some of those server-side controls, the extenders, will bring in additional resources so they can render properly. And those resources may be additional script files or more likely additional style sheets, CSS files. So you notice up in my example here, I did explicitly include that style sheet that is necessary for the color picker as well as one that was necessary for the calendar. And if you go to that documentation page that I referenced earlier, that shows you exactly what pieces you need to bring in for which toolkit controls. Okay. And the other thing that they've done is they've made sure all of these features work compatibly with jQuery. So they've been working with the jQuery crew for quite some time now, and I think that's how this whole evolution has finally taken place. But the good news is a lot of their stuff already works with jQuery. In fact, all of the toolkit controls, the client-side versions of those controls, just work in jQuery. So you can use traditional jQuery selectors, you can use all the features of jQuery you're probably used to, and you can adorn them with toolkit control elements. So watermark, in this case, is applying to the jQuery selection of the name input control. So let me just show you an example of that right here. And actually, I don't need to do that. So here I've just brought in the same script files, start debug.js. That's my kickoff for the client script loader. And then down here, in addition to calendar and watermark, I'm also telling it to load in the jQuery scripts. And this one will just load whatever you have hosted in your local site for jQuery. And then I'm using the jQuery selector here to select this input element down below. And I'm associating a calendar and a watermark. And if I run this, I should have an input element that is selected by jQuery, which has a watermark as well as a calendar when I click into it. Now let's do something a little more jQuery-like here. This feels much like the example I just finished. But with jQuery, you can do all sorts of really interesting selections, right? You can do odd and even rows. You can do based on class or based on attribute. Let's put a couple other input elements in here and just change our selector. ID is, that's fine. So I'm going to put three more input elements in. And one of them, I'm going to remove this CSS class, the date type. So I'm going to key off of that date type as part of my jQuery selector and actually adorn the calendar element, the calendar toolkit control, with everything in this DOM that has the CSS class of date type. So I can do that with our jQuery selection. So let's do dot date type to select based on CSS class. And just for something interesting, let's set the attribute of value equal to new data or something. And then we'll use the chaining to go to the calendar, like so. So this thing, the toolkit controls also are well-behaved citizens in jQuery, so they return the jQuery object when it comes back. So you can continue to chain if you want to, just like you can in traditional jQuery sequence calls. So let's try running that, and that should actually adorn all of the input elements that were annotated with the date input CSS class, which looks right. It's this one, and this one, but not this one. And each of these should also have that calendar control associated with it, but this one should not, right? So all these things work in jQuery, and you can use them in the same way you would use other features of jQuery. So that lets you know how they're sort of going to begin integrating these things. Okay. Now, as I mentioned, one of the biggest features of this client-side library, and this is also, by the way, one of the biggest features they are pushing for to move into jQuery, is a client-side templating mechanism. So client templates, the idea behind a client template is to replicate HTML. And the goal from the ASP.NET perspective was to give you something similar to what you have in terms of data binding templates on the server up in the client. And this is going to solve that problem that we've had with the AJAX calls when you're using web services, is getting back a bunch of data and then trying to figure out how to turn that data into UI elements in the client. And like I said before, it was often done by hand interacting with the DOM or using some third-party library. So what you can do, and let me just sort of walk you through the steps here. Let's go create a new page. In fact, I'm just going to create an HTML page, if I can find it, HTML. There it is. And let's call this client template test. And let's kind of go through the steps of what would be necessary to use this client-side library to create a templating, a templated HTML segment. So I'm going to go up here and add a little script element. And inside of the script, I'm just going to drop in some data that I'll be able to use to bind to. So I don't want to do any server-side work at this point. I just want to bring in some, have some local data that we'll drop in here. So I just have an array of elements in JavaScript consisting of name value pairs of course code and course. And then to bring this to make this thing work, I need to bring in the start script, which I could load from the CDN, or I'm just going to go here. I happen to have the scripts all downloaded here, so they're all referenceable locally. I'm going to bring in that start script right here. And that's the one that will instantiate the client script loader and make that sys.require thing work properly for you. And in fact, let me just move this script block down below that one so I can continue to use it. OK, once we've defined our data structure, let's go in and add a sys.require. And I want to use the sys.components.dataView. That's the component we're going to use to actually set up the binding. And notice we're getting IntelliSense here, so they've actually tied that in already for us. And that should bring in all of the necessary scripts so that I can use the data view and start working with it without having to understand which pieces I actually need. Now, before I did the onReady function, you can also just define a function directly as a parameter to the require function, and it will invoke that function when all the scripts are loaded. So if you prefer that format, you can say, just create an anonymous function here. And this feels more like a sort of modern jQuery style. And once it's loaded, what I'm going to do is create the data view and bind it to a set of templates. So here's the templating mechanism. Let's go down here and create a table. And let's put in a row. And let's put in a couple of cells. So basically, you just lay out the HTML the way you want it to appear. And then you have to figure out which section you're going to replicate during the data binding process. So in this case, I'm probably going to replicate this row with two cells in it. And for the cells, I'm going to display the course code and the course from that data structure that I have defined. And so to do this, I'm going to do two things. One is I'm going to give the table an ID that I can refer to later, so course table. And then I'm also going to set the CSS class of this element equal to sys-template. And the reason for this is sys-template is a hard-coded string that they look for to identify the elements below that are going to be replicated in this template binding mechanism. And the convention and the recommendation is to go ahead and define that CSS class in your styles. So just define sys-template. And define it with a display of none, so that when this template first appears in the client, if you're doing like client-side AJAX calls to populate it, it won't show up with any of the markup for the user. So he doesn't see the templating syntax. OK. And let's go and actually define the template now. So the template, well, we've actually defined it. The only thing we have to do is add in placeholders for the data to be injected, right? So in server-side code, it would be percent, hash mark, and then the eval function typically. In the client-side code, you can do this. It's very Silverlight-like or WPF-like. You just give it the name of the element you want to bind there, so course code. And down here, we're going to do course. Okay. So that's the template. And then the last thing to do is to create the data view to glue these things together. Okay, so I'm going to do a sys.create.dataView, and I'm going to specify the identifier of the table, course table, and I'm also going to specify a collection of properties to fill out. The only one of which I actually need for this example is the data, and I'm going to map that onto my courses array that I have defined up above. Okay. And that's it. So client-side data binding. We're just binding to data in memory here, obviously, but I'll show you an example later of actually binding to something on the server. And there we go, the replicated client-side template unfolding in response to the data view. Okay, so that's the client template syntax. And again, the key pieces are defining the table, or defining the identifier, mapping that onto the data view, and then setting the CSS class equal to sys-template, and typically defining sys-template as a display none style. Here's the rest of the code that I just typed in, the data view, initializing the table and associating it with the data view. So the data view is a pretty interesting piece of client code. I just showed you that one property, the data property. There are a bunch of other ones. Auto-fetch, if you have this associated with the data provider, which is typically going to be an AJAX-enabled WSF service, auto-fetch will tell it whether to actually invoke that service as soon as things are hooked up, or to wait until you tell it to do so by calling fetch. You can specify which verb to use if you're doing the cross-invocation. You can specify items directly for it. So flexible class with a bunch of properties on it. And then there are also some methods that you might use to interact with the data view directly. So if you want to wait until the user presses a button before you go back to the server with an AJAX call and retrieve it and actually do the template binding, you could do that by calling fetch data directly on the data view. Now, the one other missing piece here is if you want to use if you want to do data binding to attributes of your HTML elements, you can't just use the native HTML element, the native attribute rather. You need to prefix it with sys colon, and that makes sure that they can get their hands on it when they're doing the evaluation and the binding. So I have a small example here that's going to do something very similar to what we just did, except that I've augmented my array to include an image URL in addition to the course code and the course name. And then down below, we're using that sys colon syntax. And this begins to look like non-standard HTML, but it actually is fully compliant. This is standard XHTML. They've just defined an additional namespace within the XHTML body with sys colon, or the sys namespace. And this is just annotating it on top of the source attribute. So it doesn't affect the way the HTML tag works, and it actually will pass by, successfully pass, W3C standards if you run it through one of those checkers. So if you run that, now we're not only getting the course title and the course name, but we're also getting the images associated with them. And one other thing I meant to mention about this syntax, about the binding syntax, is the content within the data binding expression here is, in fact, JavaScript. So we're just dereferencing a property on the object that this row is currently being bound to. And you can use JavaScript operations within that data binding expression to do anything you want. So here I'm using the JavaScript string concatenation operator to concatenate the course code with the course in a single field inside of this table. So that's all possible. Now, the other thing they wanted to make available in this client-side templating model was cleaner HTML. So if this HTML is starting to look cluttered to you, the curly braces, the sys colon, all that stuff, you actually don't have to go to that level. You don't have to use that markup syntax if you don't want to. And a reason perhaps not to use that is if you're worried about going back and forth with the designer, and perhaps you're concerned they'll strip out some of the templates or remove one of the curly braces accidentally. You can leave the markup very clean, as you see on the slide here. I keep pointing the wrong way. As you see on the slide here. And it will, and then you can just wire things up programmatically in your client-side code. So there's a function, and let me just go ahead to the demo here. There's a function in the, there's an event, rather, which you can tie a function to, in the data view called item rendered. So this event inside of the data view you can add a handler for, and this will invoke your function every time it renders a row in the result set. And down here, you use the explicit bind function, sys.bind, go retrieve the HTML element you want to bind to, which in my case is the C1 cell down inside of the table, tell it what attribute you want to bind to, in this case the inner HTML, give it the data item and the field within the data item you want to bind to, and it all works just like it did before. So if you are concerned about the clarity or the cleanliness of the HTML, even though it's compliant, that's another option for you. Okay, and then one other thing you can do with the templates is there are these pseudo columns that are available, $index and $dataItem. These are ways of referring to the ordinal index of the result set or the current item that is being bound to. And I just have a little example here to show you. Pseudo columns. So in this one, I am binding, displaying the ordinal index in the first column, and then I'm calling my own helper function, format data item, and I'm passing in the data item that is currently being bound. And you can see my format function simply returns a string based on the parameters concatenated together. If we run that, we get this result. Now, as I mentioned before, the data binding syntax is just JavaScript, so you can pretty much do what you want to. One of the useful things you might consider doing there is doing some formatting. So in here, I'm doing things like formatting with a locale format on currency. And here, I'm actually doing a percentage division. I'm calculating it. And I'm binding this to a bunch of symbols and stock values with change in values and performing some client-side calculations. And you can see those formats being applied here. And those are all functions in the client-side script library. Okay, so those are the pseudo columns. And then one last tidbit on this whole templating thing. You can also use declarative instantiation. So you can actually achieve most of what I just showed you without using any client-side script at all. You can just attribute your element that needs to be data-bound with attributes that will associate it with a new instance of the DataView class and then set up the binding for you implicitly. And the way to do that is to bring in an explicit namespace yourself. Let me just show this example to you. So at the top of the body element, I'm bringing in two namespaces here, the sys namespace, which is technically already there, so it's redundant in this case, but it's fine. And then, sorry, let me go to the previous one right here. I'm bringing in sys and DataView. So those are the two objects, two things I want to refer to declaratively within my HTML element. And then down here, this is the declarative syntax. So notice I'm able to specify sysattach to associate a data view with this HTML element. And then I can specify parameters for the data view as data view colon attributes. And again, this will run and look pretty much the same as what we did before. One other just tidbit so you know. It's possible to build your own client-side classes quite easily too. How many of you have built server-side ASP.NET AJAX controls that actually render client-side objects? Anyone done that? Yeah, one, two, yeah, not a lot, but a few. So the client-side objects that you built as part of those server-side controls, you can very easily adapt to this new model and actually have it go through the same declarative instantiation. So I have an example of one here that I've built. This is my highlight behavior class. And this is using the client-side AJAX stuff to create a class that will associate a CSS class with an input element when it has selection focus, and then when it loses focus, it'll change this CSS class. And I'm able to do that declaratively if I wanted to. by simply referencing the namespace that I had defined up in that class definition and using the same attach mechanism and the same attribute assignment that I showed you before. So here I can associate this behavior with my element very easily. Have it toggle the CSS class. Okay. And then the place where this becomes interesting, of course, is when you start calling back to the server and having it return data across an ASP.NET or an AJAX invocation, and then using that result set to actually do a bind to the template. So you can do this with any WCF AJAX-enabled service. You can also do it with ASMX services. And if you specify auto-fetch, it will simply make the call immediately, or you can explicitly call fetch data yourself to invoke it. And I have a small example here. I have a WCF web service that I created, which was created with AJAX compatibility. It's one of the templates available when you're constructing new services inside of Visual Studio. And the implementation looks like this. And I simply return a collection of my own custom data contract objects consisting of a name and an ID pair. And my getData function just constructs a new collection of these things and streams it back up to the client. So I have an example here where I'm calling to the server, template binding with data source. Well, I'm calling to the server, mapping the data provider attribute of the data view onto this service that I built. And then my fetch operation is the function I want to invoke. And then I'm leaving autofetch set to true. And this will actually go back to the server using that AJAX call and retrieve the data and then invoke the template client binding, which is really, you know, what we're looking for in this whole thing. So let me just set up a quick trace here so you can see that happen on the wire. And notice I had, I know these are small, let me blow them up for you. I had a couple of JSON calls down here. And if we look at the stream result for these two, you can see that was the ASP.NET AJAX, or the request to the client, to the server-side WCF service, and it requested it as a JSON format, and you see it's coming back encoded with JSON. And that JSON was then bound to the template that I had associated with the data view, and it replicated it over and over, as you saw. Okay. So that's kind of the model that the client templating shoots for, is to give you a very straightforward way of defining these client templates and associating them with a collection of data in JavaScript, you know, typically retrieved from a service on the server with an AJAX call, and then bound with JSON. Okay, a couple other interesting things in the library here. One is live bindings. So the syntax I've shown you so far has been a one-way binding process where you take data and you just drop it into the various fields inside of your template. They also support something called live binding, where you use the single curly brace syntax and you specify the binding keyword and then tell it what property you want to bind to. And one place where this is really interesting is even if you're not doing you know, server-side calls or anything like that, you can actually very easily create associations between elements on the form. Let me just run this for you to show you what I mean. So here, notice that I have some text in an input element, and I have that same text up in an H3 element above me. And if I change the text here to something different and lose the focus in that control, that change is reflected up here. And what's interesting is I was able to do that by setting up a declarative association between these two DOM elements in the browser. And you don't really have to worry about handling the events or setting the data yourself. You just point them both to the same data structure in memory in JavaScript, and they it will detect the change notification and propagate the reevaluate the template. So here's how we did that. I just brought in the data view again, and this time my data view is being bound to a very simple element. So it's just a single object. It's not a collection of objects. And I'm binding it to a div down below. And this is a good example of the flexibility of the templating model, right? In this case, I don't want to actually replicate data. I just want to create data associated with various elements in the DOM. So I chose to use a div as my containing element. And then I was able to use this binding syntax within the div so that elements of that data structure are associated with expressions inside of this template. And then notice I use the two-way binding syntax right here. Let's put a return there. And right here. So that's what I just demonstrated. And those are both pointing to the same title property within that data structure that I showed you up above. So anytime it was modified, it was reflected down here as well. It's also possible to specify conversion functions if you go to and from these binding expressions. And I have an example here where I'm doing that, and I'm calling convert to on the display, where I want to take the number in memory and actually prefix it with a dollar sign. And in my input element down below, I have a convert to and a convert back function. So it'll invoke this in either direction as you're making the binding process. So here's the two functions, $2 and from dollars, and I simply prefix it with a currency symbol or strip off the first character in the set. Okay, there's the conversion functions we talked about. Now, the other interesting, the way that's technically implemented is once I set up the data view to bind to this thing, it made that data observable. And this observable thing, this observer class, implements the observer pattern, which you might have run across in JavaScript before. It's a way to just walk up to any arbitrary object in JavaScript and essentially instrument it with change notifications. So if something happens to any of the elements within that JavaScript object, it will notify anyone that's listening that something has changed. And there are actually several implementations out there of something very similar to this, if you're looking for it today and are for some reason not adopting this. But let me just show that to you. It's kind of compelling. So here's the observer pattern. And all I've done is prepare this in-memory array in JavaScript with ID and name value pairs. And then down here, I've specified, once everything is loaded, that I want to make that array observable. Okay, so that instruments the data structure. So it's capable of sending back notifications now. And then here, I'm constructing a data view and binding it to a list down below. And then the user is, and then I'm associating it with this data structure. Now, the difference between what I'm doing here and what I did earlier is that I am able to modify the data structure directly and have that impact the template. So my template's right down here. Here's the ordered list that is being bound to. And I basically want this thing to rebind anytime anything in the data structure changes. So I gave the user the ability to add new items, and I gave him the ability to take the last one off. And add new items looks like this. I simply construct a new instance out of memory, and I add it to the end of that array in memory. And remove just takes the last item off of the JavaScript array. So you can work directly with the data and have the changes be reflected in any object that's watching it. So here's that example, a new ID, a new name, enter, add one more, and then delete some. So it gives you a nice sort of separation of the data from the actual rendering of the data, and it let the binding process take care of propagating the changes. Okay, and this is all kind of building up to pairing this with real data coming from the server, right? Wouldn't it be nice if we could have observable data that was loaded from the server, that was loaded from some persistent data store, and let the user manipulate some of those values, and then somehow take all the values that were changed and package them up and send them back across an AJAX call to save the changes? And the class that they've built to do exactly this is called the data context. So the data context lets you associate a service and an operation for saving data, and it will invoke when you invoke the save changes function on the context, it will actually take the changes that have been made to the in-memory data and propagate them back, and then you can save the changes. Now you can do this by hand. You can actually build your own service, but more likely you're going to want to use the ADO.NET data services or WCF data services now. Which expose these things for you automatically and let you use the data context in a much the same way that you use it on the server with Entity Framework or Link to SQL. And the way this works is there's a service proxy they have built that's capable of invoking methods from the client onto an ADO.NET data services object or a WCF data services object. And then there's an ADO.NET data context object which derives from the data context. And you can just point it to an ADO.NET data context service, and it will wire up the functions for you because that exposes a standard REST API on top of your database. And then you can also make modifications to data, save them back to the server, have them restored, et cetera, et cetera. So I have a completed application that sort of ties it all together. I just want to demonstrate to you briefly here. This is an example that's shipped with the download, when you download the client-side scripts. It's under here. So this is the ASP.NET Ajax demo. And if you take a look at the use of the data context here, it's using the WCF service to propagate the changes. And this will kind of just give you an idea of what's possible. So notice that I have each of these images being rendered. This is all being rendered with the client-side data binding feature that I talked about. If you notice, I have some garbage associated with some of these titles from a previous demo. So what I'm going to do is just change those values back to what they should be. And notice we're getting the change notifications happening in the client. That's all using the observer pattern. And once you're done making all those changes to the in-memory version of that data, you can press, you can invoke the save changes function on the ADO.NET data context, and that will actually propagate it back to the data service. So this sort of gives you a full picture of what's possible with all these things. And just to show you that it all actually was persisted, this is using the entity framework on the back side. If I go ahead and run this one more time, notice all the values are the same as they were after I left them last. So I didn't have the garbage at the end of each of the titles. Okay. So, like I said, there was a sudden shift in this library, so I didn't want to keep you here too long. I just want to give you an idea of what's in there and let you know that they are refocusing their efforts on jQuery. So all of the ideas you see here should manifest themselves in some way going forward inside of a jQuery plugin, and just keep an eye on that. However, it is all available today. You're welcome to use it as is, but that's kind of the story as it is today. I do have some free week trial subscriptions if you want to come up and grab one. Otherwise, I will have these demos available for you to download right here, Tech Days 10 Ajax, and they'll be up there later tonight. So if anyone has questions, please come up and chat. I'm happy to hang out and chat for a while. Otherwise, thanks for coming, and I hope you guys enjoyed the show.